Coming up, a conversation with Bill Weisong, Republican candidate for El Paso County Commissioner District 3 on making democracy work.
This is Studio 809 Podcasts, informing, connecting, and empowering the residents of the Pikes Peak region.
Welcome to Making Democracy Work. I'm your host, Shelley Roars, spokesperson for the League of Women Voters of the Pikes Peak region. We are coming to you from the Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at the Next Us with an amazing view, so you need to make sure you come and check it out. The Next Us is a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs. So thank you again for taking the time to learn more about being an active and engaged citizen. The League is a nonpartisan grassroots organization focusing on voter education and outreach, good government, and citizens' education. Today's conversation falls under voter education. In addition to our Vote 411 questions that candidates get the opportunity to answer, we also invite our local candidates on the upcoming ballot to be interviewed here on our podcast. And to avoid duplication, our questions will focus on childcare, the environment, and homelessness and extreme poverty. Our guest today is Mr. Bill Weisong, running as a Republican for El Paso County Commissioner District 3. Welcome, Bill.
Great. Thank you very much, Shelley, and glad to be here.
For our listeners, can you give us your 30-second elevator pitch introduction about you and why you're running for El Paso County Commissioner District 3?
The key reason for me running is there are certain things that came out of the legislature and some fellow candidates that I felt weren't representing the people properly. And that really triggered me to run. And that was early March. So I was way behind the game. I had enough time to participate in the county assembly. And I won my place on the ballot. And that kind of is what started this whole process. And I'm very excited to have won the primary and represent the people in District 3.
Yes, sir. All right. And so my first question then is, I'm going to jump right into it. Our first question, what sets you apart from your opponent?
I believe the almost 4 years that I have been a neighborhood community advocate for the safety of the West Side, that it really sets me apart because I've been in front of city council many, many, many times and hours, and I've also been in front of the Board of Commissioners talking about safety issues when it comes to the neighborhoods that potentially could be threatened with the wildfire evacuation like we all experienced back in 2012 during the Waldo Canyon fire.
What are your highest priorities for our community?
You know, the highest priority at this point, after getting elected, is really continuing the understanding of what the needs are from an inside perspective. You know, we've heard in the polls are saying that, you know, inflation is a critical issue, you know, the economy in general. We've got the issue with the crime. We're very nervous about what's happening in Denver could actually come down into Colorado Springs. You know, your illegal immigration, the homelessness, they're all parts of what needs to be understood and come up with the best plan possible within the boundaries of, you know, the capabilities of a commissioner to try to solve these problems.
Okay. Let's assume you win. Choose one single issue that you would prioritize in the coming term. Name it and describe what you want to accomplish.
I would say public safety is going to be my top priority. And there's a couple of facets to that. The first one is making sure that the sheriff and the DA have everything that they need. In the discussions with both of those gentlemen, there's stuff coming down the road that they're going to need additional funding. How do we do that? I have no idea yet. The other side of public safety is for the people themselves, that it comes into the evacuation element, and I'm going to focus on getting the Pikes Peak Area Office of Emergency Management to incorporate evacuation planning as part of the generic requirements that the office needs to do to make sure that they're very focused, they plan. And the whole idea behind my theme there is failing to plan is planning to fail. And the idea is that we look at various scenarios and we continue to build those scenarios where some could be easy to take care of, some might be a little more difficult. But that has been really my neighborhood advocacy for the last 4 years, is trying to get evacuation planning as part of the core requirement within the public safety preview of both. Now it would be the county through OEM.
Okay. Let's also assume you win as a newcomer to this seat. Tell us how a rookie would keep from being a backbencher or playing the bench?
Being that the 4 years that I've already spent in front of City Council and in the Board of Commissioners, I do not see myself as being a backbencher. I feel that I can immediately come in with that experience and be an active participant in everything that's going on.
Very well. All right. So let's go into those topics that I mentioned earlier in our introduction. So tell me about what are your budget priorities and how they would impact women and families in our community.
So the budget priority is going to be focusing on law enforcement, making sure it appears that we also have, our property tax issues taken care of, because the economy is kind of second to public safety. And as long as we can focus and help our population in the El Paso County be safe and at the same time get as much out of the refund, out of Tabor, out of property tax that they're due, then they're going to have money to take care of their families.
Okay. Let's talk about our environment a little bit. We as a society rely on the transportation sector for the movement of goods and people, but it is the largest contributor of global warming emissions in our county and our state, and a major source of harmful air pollution that contributes to serious public health issues. Black, Indigenous, people of color communities have been disproportionately affected by tailpipe pollution from cars, trucks, and buses, and historic infrastructure choices such as highway construction have harmed many communities. What steps will you take to reduce emissions from transportation and ensure an equitable transportation system?
Well, I think the important thing to realize that you need to take small, measured steps. We've gotten where we are today over the course of, 150 years. And making drastic changes like the Green New Deal and a few others could have absolutely crippling effects on not only the county, the state, and the country as a whole. So it comes back to, as I was saying before, you need to really look at long-term planning. It's something that we as a people aren't very good at because we like the immediate gratification of X, Y, or Z. So instead of looking at, 5 years or 10 years, we need to look at where we want to be in 50 to 100, 150 years and plan around for that, whether it's looking at acquiring land for a better rail system. Right now they talk about putting it way out east. Well, then it becomes a longer trek. And are people going to utilize it as an example? I think when we do too much impingement on the traffic flow, bike paths where there's no bikes that use it. And all of a sudden now you're stacking up cars. That adds more pollution because now only a few cars at one lane getting each way through an intersection at a time instead of two. So the longer a car waits at a stoplight, that is adding pollution. So the whole idea is to move people the quickest and the most efficient way from point A to point B.
All right, moving on to homelessness and extreme poverty in our communities. El Paso County had 928 homeless people in shelters and 347 people living on the streets at the last point in time count, which is from the Colorado Sun, dated February 21st of 2024. How do you see faith-based organizations, non-governmental organizations, and our local, state, and federal government working together to help fight extreme poverty and homelessness? And how can we as private citizens play a role?
Well, they just announced a new homelessness point-in-time survey. I think it was this morning. The numbers were down. However, it's also in the middle of summer. Or towards the tail end of summer, people are going to be a little more scattered. So it kind of makes sense. At the same time, I think some of the methodology they use to actually conduct the survey could be called into question in the sense that there's a lot of prior involvement, movement, and I don't think we have a real accurate number. So I'll just kind of leave that point there. Regardless, we do have a homeless population, issue with the homeless population. How we solve that is really a tough question because you can really put the homelessness issue into three pretty much categories. You have those that have just fallen on hard times. And so I'm just going to split it in equal thirds because it's easy to discuss. Then you have, that middle third that there are some of those that they just don't want to abide by societal rules. They like being free. They like just being able to roam around, et cetera. Then you have that bottom third, and these are your mental issues that they just have they just really have a tough time coping. So you basically look at, okay, how are we going to deal with all those? And on my webpage, I actually have done some research on the homelessness, and there are different capabilities that where there are help. And in Austin, Texas, as an example, they've actually put together some small communities that will help people at least get out of the elements. Down there during the summer, it's the heat. Here in El Paso County, it's going to be the cold. So how do we do that? And I'm a very strong advocate of providing a hand up, not a handout. Some may need the handout because they don't have the capability to do much. And that's that bottom third that I was referencing earlier. However, the others, they need that hand up because it's a temporary type scenario. And if we can really focus on helping them, then all of a sudden that homeless population starts shrinking. In the case of my example, by a third. And now we have more resources, like you had mentioned, with the nonprofits and the religious organizations, et cetera, that they actually have fewer people that they have to deal with. And then finding a real solution for those that are incapacitated mentally, physically, and need more help, that needs to be done. However, we also have to be careful. We don't violate laws that we have to sustain our society. And that becomes a little tougher part to maintain.
Okay. I'm going to follow up on the second part of that question was how can we as citizens, private citizens, play a role in that?
Well, there's probably many. The first one, I believe, is, you know, helping the nonprofits as much as we can to, you know, help fund the soup kitchens and the rescue missions and the others that have the wherewithal and the infrastructure to help manage and help those that are in need. However, money isn't everything. And even as they talk about it, they've got the signs posted. When you encourage people through the panhandling or at the curb, you know, previous mayor and others have all said, don't provide the handout there. We need them to focus and follow the rules, so to speak, utilize those resources that are there and not put people in harm by walking in traffic.
Yes, sir. Okay. And a couple of other questions. In your opinion, what is the best indication of economic health? Is it the stock market, unemployment rate, income? What does that look like to you?
Yeah, the stock market can be too fickle. I think the largest indicator are the price of the common goods that everyone has to buy. Price of eggs, bread, milk. What does it take to sustain the everyday family? And with the price of eggs and milk and bread that have almost risen 50% over the last 4 years, that's very telling. We've got an issue which is above the preview of a county commissioner, but as much support and help that we can give our state representatives who then can pass that on at the federal level, that's what we need to do. So it's really how far does that dollar go for the everyday people in El Paso County?
Okay. Is there anything that you wanted to say that we didn't touch on today?
Well, I just really appreciate the opportunity, not only to be here, but having the opportunity to run for the County Commissioner District 3. I have met a number of fabulous people, especially over the last 4 years with my community work. And it started actually a little bit earlier with was nominated to take over for being the president of our local neighborhood association. And that was my first really forte into, okay, outside of anything other than, you know, events or organizations that I was involved in, this took the kind of that first step. And then when we needed to engage as a community against the city, then everything was a learning experience from someone that didn't even know how, you know, the process worked to now constantly, you know, going in and advocating for the community, following the rules and processes that they've made us follow.
Very good.
Sometimes tough.
Yes, sir. And local HOA elections are local elections at its finest. So when you're that down and dirty into it, we do HOA election candidate forums, and we also manage HOA elections, the whole process for ballots and everything. So that is a service the league provides. So thank you for doing the HOA stuff, because that, again, is local elections right there. That's the grassroots. So.
Well, and it's not an HOA. It's just a community association.
Well, oh, sorry. So either way.
That is true, but
I'm sure you still have bylaws and whatnot. So.
We do. It's just much less formal. It's very informal. And so, you know, we have a little leeway.
Being active and engaged in your community is
yes,
right there for us. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wysong, for taking the time today to let us get to know you a bit more. We appreciate you answering our questions and putting yourself out there by running for elected office. We know it's not easy. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And again, feel free to utilize my webpage if you need to contact me and reach out. And I'd love to hear from our District 3 constituents.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you. In addition to Vote 411 and interviews here on our Making Democracy Work podcast, the League is hosting 15 candidate forums for voters to learn more about those running for office on the November 5th ballot. Check out our event calendar on our website, lwvppr.org, for a detailed list of scheduled candidate forums and our ballot issues form. Military ballots were to be mailed around September 21st, with the rest of the ballots mailed by October 10th. Your ballot must be returned by 7 p.m. on Tuesday, November 5th. Remember, the League is here if you have any questions. Thank you again for listening today and for educating yourself before you vote. Until next time, let's all do better.